بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على نبينا محمد وشهد أن لا إله إلا الله واحد ولا شريك له وشهد أن محمد عبده ورسوله. أما بعد. طيب إن شاء الله. So we are continue with our trying to narrow down what is غرر. As you can tell we've been spending a lot of time on it, and the reason why we've been spending a good time on it is because there's a certain in the literature there's a number of people who are trying to like bring up the fact that gharar is not well defined, and so therefore it's almost something that you cannot invoke as a ruling basically. So if we can define it, we can understand it, then inshallah we can obviously use it as a principle. So that's one point. And so I'm going to try to pretty much finish up with Dr. Sami Suwaylam's paper today that you all have a copy of. And then next week I'm going to answer a couple of the critiques that someone has made of Sami Suwaylam's paper, inshallah. I'm not very impressed with the critique, so it shouldn't take us too long to handle it, inshallah. And then we're going to move on to riba. But in this quarter, my intention, there's two types of riba. So in this quarter, my intention was just to handle one of the two, probably the less known and less understood one. That is riba al-buyur. That's one of the names for it, riba al-buyur. And then next quarter, we'll be discussing the other kind of riba, the other one that is much more well-known and much more practiced. Riba al-buyur is not very much practiced, but it's important to understand the concepts, inshallah. Okay, so that's where we're heading and what we're doing, inshallah. Any questions before we get going, before we start? Okay. So first we're just going to kind of recapture again the basic issue and the basic focus that we want to have. So as I said, on any issue, the first thing you're going to have is the text of the Quran and Sunnah. And that's going to be the overriding factor. If the Quran and Sunnah show that something is clearly permissible, then it's going to be permissible. If the Quran and Sunnah clearly prohibit something, it's going to be prohibited. So that's the overriding factor. However, there might be some issues that the Quran and Sunnah point to something, give us some indication of, but maybe not give us a complete indication of. So we still have to use it. Like for example, the hadith that says that the Prophet ﷺ نهى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم عن بيع الغرر, that the Prophet ﷺ prohibited gharar type transactions. Doesn't give us all the details, but we know that they are prohibited. And then we're going to try to use Dr. Sami Suwaylam's criteria for identifying what is gharar. And then there might be, on some occasions, the question of need for a certain type of transaction. And when do we have to invoke the question of need, the haja? And need is less than necessity. Necessity of dharura is a very urgent, strong case of need. So here we're talking about need, not dharura. So some of the cases that we know, let's put Suwaylam here. So the selling of a lost camel. So according to Sami Suwaylam's criteria, selling of a lost camel, does that fall under his definition of forbidden gharar?
Yes.
Okay, y'all remember that? Then it's clear, right? Mm-hmm. So this is definitely gharar, the forbidden type. What's our conclusions about selling a lost camel?
It's forbidden.
It's forbidden. So that's your conclusion. I think I said our, I meant to say your. It's your conclusion. How about a pure partnership? Well, so selling a lost camel, in the way that Sami Suwaylam analyzed it, what kind of game is that? Selling a
zero-sum
game, right? Zero-sum. So that's why he's going to say it's haram. How about a pure partnership? Okay, so it's a positive sum game, right? Is there any gharar involved in a pure partnership?
No. Yeah, so almost any economic activity, there's some risk. And in fact, if you want to make a profit, you have to have risk from a Sharia point of view. If you want to be deserving of a profit, you have to bear the liability and bear the risk. So there is zara, but it is of the permissible variety. And by ijma, I don't know of anyone who does not permit a pure partnership. What about sharecropping?
Yeah, mixed income.
Is there zara involved in sharecropping?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a mixed sum game. It's not positive sum. It's not zero sum. It's a mixed sum game. So meaning there could be a situation where one wins and the other one loses. Right? That's a kind of ghadar, where one wins, the other one loses. That possibility. But what did we conclude about a sharecropping using Sami Suwaylam's analysis?
It's okay.
Permissible? Okay, why? What was the essential thing? What are some of the essential things?
The goal is the positive.
Okay, the goal, both parties are interested in getting the positive outcome. Because the magnitude on the positive side, for the winner, the landowner, is going to be greater. And the Sharia, permissible. So how about Ji'ala? What about Ji'ala? What is Ji'ala again?
Bonus.
Yeah?
Bonus.
Bonus. Okay, bonus, reward. It's a reward kind of contract. Is there ghadar involved?
Yes.
Is it a mixed sum or a positive sum game? Or zero sum?
Mixed sum.
It's mixed sum, right?
Mixed sum.
Okay. And so according to Suwaylam's criteria, it should be permissible. And did we say that there's any evidence from the Quran and Sunnah as well?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so far what Sami Suwaylam is showing us, his model at least, is completely consistent with what we know from the Quran and Sunnah and what we know from Ijma'ah. And so last time we discussed though, Al-Urbun. And what is Al-Urbun again? Okay, non-refundable deposit.
Okay.
If it's refundable, is it a problem? If you tell someone, for example, I want to buy your car. Here's $1,000 to hold it for me. But if I change my mind, you'll return the $1,000 to me. Is that permissible? Did we discuss that one? Is that permissible?
Hmm?
What's that?
Sounds permissible.
Sounds permissible. Okay. That's the best you can say? It sounds permissible? Why would you say it's permissible?
There's no ghadar?
Okay.
If there's a time
it's period. Not a situation where someone's going to get a loss. So there has to be a time limit, obviously. There should be a time limit set for it. Otherwise, if it's open-ended, then you have that Jihala, that ignorance about or uncertainty about, you know, you're going to have to hold it for him forever. So there's a time limit. Is there any difference between if you buy something, for example, and you have option of return? So I sell you something, I say, okay, you can return in 30 days. Is there any difference between that and putting a deposit? Let's say like a deposit for 30 days. And if the contract, if you don't buy it, then you get your money back and the contract is finished. Is there any difference between those two? Or are they pretty much analogous? Okay. So it is like a contract with the option to return, which is considered permissible in the Sharia. But Al-Urbun is a little bit different. And what's the big difference in Al-Urbun? You're going to lose the deposit. So if the contract doesn't go through, the seller is going to end up with money. And what did he give up for that money? What real thing did he give up for that money?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Okay.
What about the opportunity to sell
it? Real. I said real, not imaginable. Real in economics, there's a difference between real and nominative and potential. So when I say real, I mean
tangible.
Tangible, for example. Is it allowed to take somebody's wealth without anything in exchange? Okay. So the only thing you can say he gave up in exchange was what?
Opportunity.
He held on to the item and did not sell it. So, according to Sami Swalem's analysis of Arbon, did he give analysis of it? He didn't discuss it too much. He didn't give it. He didn't tell you the payoff structure. So we can analyze it here. So let's look at the payoff structure. We have outcome A and outcome B. We have the depositor and the depositee. We have person one and person B, two. Okay, one is the one who's paying the deposit. One is the one who's paying the deposit. So if the contract goes through, then the one who's buying the item gets the item that he wants. And in economic theory, if you buy something, theoretically this means you're happy. The thing that you're buying, is at least meeting your marginal, the price you're paying is at least equal to your marginal utility is above that and so forth. So if the contract goes through, it's a plus for the buyer. What about for the seller? Same kind of idea, right? I mean, he's selling it, he wants to sell it, and so therefore he is happy with selling it. If it doesn't go through, then what happens?
Minus.
Okay, the one who paid the deposit is going to lose money, and the one who received the deposit is going to gain. Right? He's going to keep that money for very little, let's say, he didn't do much. Just holding on to an item, maybe he couldn't have sold it anyway. So this is a, what do we call this kind of game?
Mixed sum.
This is a mixed sum game, right? And how are we going to say, okay, so this could be bad, right? You could have a mixed sum game that Sami Swalem will say is haram. What kind of mixed sum game would Sami Swalem say is haram?
The venture is too risky. The venture is too risky.
Oh, okay. Oh, if the venture is too risky, but let's not worry about that one. That's by default almost anything.
Both don't want the same outcome.
Okay, yes. If outcome B is preferred to the seller, then you get a mixed desired outcome. You want one party wants one outcome and the other party wants another outcome, and that outcome is where one wins and the other one loses. What about this situation? The one who is selling, the one who is buying, I think we can all assume that the one who is buying wants outcome A, right? Because the other one has a minus, by his name. What about the one who is selling?
Usually he would want to sell it. But that's what he has on the market.
Okay. So when he sells it, he's going to get the deposit plus the rest of the price. Right? And he's going to sell the thing that he was wanting to sell anyway. So theoretically, the seller also should want outcome A. So in any case, both parties want outcome A. So it's a plus-plus is what they are desiring. And so there's gharar involved, but Sami Swalem would say, in this case, the gharar is going to be considered, is going to be considered minor gharar or overlooked by the Sharia. So over here we would say permissible. What about texts? What about texts from the Quran and Sunnah about al-arbun?
Next.
Because, you know, if we have text, then we can look at his model. Is his model consistent with the text from the Quran and Sunnah or not? If it is consistent, good. If it's not, You know, we only really have to disprove his model with one. Now, listen to this clearly. We only have to disprove his model with one clear case of a gharar transaction. We only have to disprove his model by one clear case of a gharar transaction. We cannot take another transaction which is not a gharar transaction and then disprove his model with it. Because his model is just about gharar. This is how we judge gharar. Gharar for him is a zero-sum gain. The prohibited gharar is a zero-sum gain. So what about the text? Do we have... But he's saying that there's gharar here. This is a gharar transaction. But it is going to be overlooked by the Sharia.
We have no authentic marfu' hadith.
Okay, we have no authentic hadith traced back to the Prophet. We have a hadith which prohibits it, and we have a hadith that permits it, but neither of them is authentic. Now, one of the contemporary authors, Dr. Dorir, who wrote a book. He has a 500-page book on al-gharar. But he also wrote an article for Majma al-Fiqh. He wrote a paper for Majma al-Fiqh on Bay al-Arbon. And one of his arguments, he concludes Bay al-Arbon is not halal. And one of his important arguments towards the beginning of his argument, towards the beginning of his paper, is that the hadith prohibiting Bay al-Arbon, they're both weak, both the hadith are weak, but this one is stronger. So therefore he leans towards that one. Is that a good argument? No? Kareem, why not? Since you...
If you asked, it probably means it's no.
No, that's not... That's, this means you've missed class too often, too, if you make that assumption. Anybody else?
I mean, they're both... You can't rely on either. I mean, if we had only one of them, you still couldn't rely on it.
Okay, so... If you're saying that they are weak, that means by definition they are not authorities in Islamic law. And to say that one proof is a little bit closer to being an authority than the other one is not a very strong, it's not a strong argument. Okay, that approach is not sound. So we are in a case like some of the others where under Quran Sunnah, there's no texts, there's no authentic text concerning al-Arbon. Concerning the Sahaba, we have different reports. There's that story about Umar and the prison house being bought for him. That story, besides one of the narrations having some weakness to it, but it doesn't give us the details. Was that a deposit? Was that a non-refundable deposit, or did he actually buy it and option to return, or what? We don't know really what went on there. So we have kind of a mixed among the Sahaba. We have a mixed thing. So according to what we can see from Dr. Swalem's approach, should al-Arbon be permissible or not?
If the outcome A is desired.
Okay. If outcome A is the desired one, then it should be permissible. Right? Now only the Hanbalis, historically speaking, only the Hanbalis say it is halal. The others say it is gharar and consuming wealth without any giving anything in exchange. But the Hanbalis accept it, and they accept the idea that the person is waiting and being paid for waiting and so forth. Another argument that they do use is the argument of the basic rule is that of permissibility. The basic rule is that of permissibility, which means that the burden of proof is on the one who's going to say it's haram, and they don't feel that the other party has presented enough proof. But that brings us to a contemporary issue. So if this is permissible, if this is permissible, then that brings us to the question of the call options and the put options. Starting, obviously, if you say that al-arbon is haram, then the call options and the put options are definitely going to be haram. So that's not, you know, that's pretty easy. But if you say arbon is permissible, now you have to ask the question about the call and put options. And basically these have to do with buying stocks. So a call option is a contract where you put a non-refundable deposit. Put down a non-refundable deposit. And once you pay that non-refundable deposit, you will have the right, let's just give a price of $100. You will have the right to buy that stock at $100.